Good afternoon. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, April 10th. Let the reflect the time is 1:34 p.m. I have education on the mind, obviously, considering what's up before us. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. And thank you to Nancy Hemingway with Senate Records and Eileen Keim with the LIO and Buddy Witt, our committee aide today, for assisting us. We have one item on the agenda. We'll be introduced to SJR 9, Constitutional Amendment, Appropriation for Public Education, sponsored by Senator Costello. And we have invited testimony for this bill, so I will open and be closing public testimony today as well. I'd like to ask committee members to keep your questions and comments focused on the items before the committee, and all, as always, concise questions, thoughtful brevity are the order of the day. Are there any questions or comments from committee members before we begin? Seeing none, I'd like to invite Senator Costello and her staff to the table. Welcome, both of you, to Senate Judiciary. Please place your names on the record after you get situated and tell us about SJR 9.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mia Costello. I represent Senate District K in Anchorage, which is right by the airport. And I really appreciate you taking time from the committee to hear this bill today. This bill is a constitutional amendment, and its aim is to early fund education during the legislative session. So usually what happens in the session is that the education funding is either fully funded or we add funding, and then it is passed at the very end of session. During that time, school districts are asked to give pink slips. And one of the main problems that we have in our education system today is the churning of teachers who come into schools. They're talented teachers, and then within that first year, they're given a pink slip. The amount of money that we can save by early funding education is about $20 million if you look at the training that the districts do for the teachers and getting them on board. We also hear from rural districts that the loss of a teacher in the community is really significant for the students, because what ends up happening is that the students have teachers coming and going every single year of their educational experience, which sends a message that the teachers aren't there to stay, when in fact I believe the legislature has a role in that, and we have a role in addressing providing more stability for our districts. And this bill has had another committee, the Education Committee heard it, and the testimony that we heard from teachers is that this is such a chaotic time, and it's essentially what happens if you're a teacher in Alaska, is that you get hired, you have your first year, your pink slip, and then you have to move. And Madam Chair and members of the committee, this legislation is intended to place the education funding within the first 45 days of session. And my aide, Tom Wright, will go through the bill. It does not mean that there's a certain level of funding for education. It doesn't mean there's extra or cuts. It just essentially says that the legislature will pass a separate education funding mechanism by day 45 of each legislative session. So thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Wright, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I have quite a bit, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Wright. I'm staff to Senator Costello. In your packets, you have SJR 9. You have the sponsor statement. There are zero fiscal notes from the Department of Education and Early Development. I have not seen anything yet from the Division of Elections. The constitutional sections that are affected by SJR 9, there is a legal memo from Ledge Legal that discusses why we decided to do a constitutional amendment rather than by statute. There's also support letters and emails, and you also have research from ICER, Ledge Research, and other research that we happen to accumulate from other committees. As I mentioned, there have been efforts to enact statutory change to early education funding, but when you we've referred to the legal memo written by Mira Coet of Ledge Legal, entrenchment, or binding of one legislature to another, it's called legislative entrenchment, is prohibited by both the U.S. and Alaska Supreme Courts. Earlier in the process, we had legislation drafted that would have made a statutory change and required early funding, but after receiving the legal memo, we decided to draft a constitutional amendment, and that's before the committee today. Looking back at variations of education funding through a constitutional amendment, really haven't found anything. I went back to, I think it was 1986, 84, and there really have not been efforts. There have been different efforts of private versus public schools, but nothing to deal with early education. There have been early education statutory changes that have been introduced, but none have been successful. SJR 9 does two things. It requires a separate appropriation bill to fund K through 12 public education, and it requires the legislature to pass and transmit the appropriation funding K through 12 bill by the 45th day of each regular session. Currently, school districts by statute are required to submit their budgets to their municipal governments by May 1st. And these dates vary depending on the municipal ordinance from March 1st to early May. And if you look at the research that has been done, the legislature typically passes their operating budget anywhere from mid-April to late May. And passage after May 1 creates uncertainty for school districts, but also creates uncertainty for municipalities as well. This uncertainty forces school districts to issue pink slips to tenured teachers if the budget is not finalized by May 15th. Non-tenured pink slipped on or before the last day of the school term, and that's found in AS 142140. There's been an ICER study that shows the turnover rate throughout various communities throughout the state. Rural areas was way over 30%. The hub communities were 22%. More populated areas, 14 to 16%. And according to ICER, research shows that high teacher turnover hurts student achievement. Within the state, the last numbers that we were given, there are approximately 8,900 teachers throughout the state. Turnover is about 1,000 teachers a year, and that was according to NEA. And the cost of retraining teachers, getting new teachers into the system, is approximately $20,000 per teacher. So it's pretty significant cost to the school district to have to train teachers and do whatever necessary to bring them into the system. And as Senator Costello mentioned, it's a cost of around $20 million a year total. The uncertainty among municipalities and local government when attempting to build a budget for the next fiscal year is one of the things that this will solve. We have various letters of support for SJR 9. We have numerous emails from around the state. We also have letters of support from the Alaska Council of School Administrators, Association of Alaska School Boards, and NEA, and again, many teachers and constituents statewide in our packets. As Senator Costello mentioned, SJR 9 does not get into the level of funding for this bill. All it does is says that the legislature shall pass and transmit a bill to the governor by the 45th day. SJR 9 removes education from the late session negotiations that normally take place between the two legislative bodies and the administration. It might happen on the 40th day, but it's not part of that last minute negotiation, and it removes the uncertainty, as I said, and I think that's a key word when you start thinking about this bill, is the removal of uncertainty. SJR 9 is about supporting K through 12 education funding, and again, removing the uncertainty of funding for our schools. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions of the sponsor? Well, I have one. When I do the math for the $20 million, it looks like there's about 1,000 recruitment retention processes that are, if it's 20,000, 1,000 in the state. Do you know how many teachers total we have?
Madam Chair, we have approximately 8,900. That was the last figure I was given.
Okay. It is, and I know in some districts the turnover I've heard is as high as 100%, and even can even be above 100% if a teacher doesn't stay a full year, and that's a sad situation too. But I understand that has happened before. So I have a question. I was looking at the research, legislative research paper with a question on the second page. It says, do any states have constitutional provisions requiring the passage of state K-12 funding measures by a specific date? And their response was, we've located no state constitutional provisions that require school districts to submit a budget to local governments by a certain date. And I may have been the one that actually asked this question in Senate Education Committee, or at least it was on my mind, because it wasn't about whether districts had their constitutional provisions requiring districts to submit their budgets to local government. My question is, are there any states that have constitutional provisions such as this one in their state constitution requiring the legislature to pass K-12 funding by a certain date?
Madam Chair, I did ask legal research that question, and they did not find any state that had that requirement.
And do you know how are other states having the same kind of problem, or how have they avoided it, or all states going through this pink slip problem?
Madam Chair, I can't answer that. I don't know.
I don't know if Deed would have any information on that, but I'm seeing them nod their heads no, but that would be an interesting thing to find out how other states are handling it, because certainly is a problem wasting $20 million, and that, not to mention the anxiety and stress that it causes. Senator Reinbold.
So basically, I hate that teachers are politicized in the newspaper. I hate that, you know, they can't wait to go and say, oh, we're going to fire 45 teachers, and everybody's freaking out. The parents are freaking out, everybody. And it seems to be very politicized, and I can remember this for decades happening, and I absolutely hate it. So I did an amendment that on the House floor and the budget that said that teachers have to be cut last. That every other mechanism of possible cuts to administration or anything has to come before teachers. And sadly, we lost by a very small margin, and this was about a year or two ago in the budget. So it is an issue that I find to be extremely important, because I subbed for years, and I was called in a lot at the beginning and at the end of the year, you know, and it was very difficult. So I'm a huge believer. But isn't it not true that the local school boards can prioritize teachers right now?
Madam Chair, Senator Reinbold, I think that question would be better addressed by either someone from the School Board Association or the Council of School Administrators.
Okay. Do you have other questions for the sponsor?
Well, I guess I want that because if not, you know, constitutional amendments take years often to get through, and so I think we need something quicker than years, and that's why I think as a stopgap right now, I would still love to get that amendment through, that teachers have to be prioritized last, because to me, if you need a substitute to come in, you should be prioritized a bunch, you know, because they're the ones with the interaction with the, you know, with the students, and so anyway, I'm very supportive of teachers being prioritized, but I just think this is going to take an awful long time.
And Madam Chair, Senator Reinbold, we've looked at different ways of trying to, you know, either move the date for, you know, for notifying teachers that they're going to be pink slip. But again, it's all predicated on funding, and you can't hold a teacher till July 1st and then tell them that they're going to be pink slipped. Again, it's predicated on funding, you know, from the state and also from the local governments themselves. And so it's really difficult, you know, to try to move the date around, because you just don't know exactly when that funding is going to take place for education.
Senator Reinbold?
Yeah, and just is there something in the union contracts, or is there something that requires them to be notified?
Madam Chair, Senator Reinbold, there is statutory language that says they have to be notified by a certain date. Again, non-tenured teachers by the last day of school, and tenured teachers, I can't remember what the date was, but there is a date before that they have to be notified.
Senator Reinbold?
So through the chair, so this could be fixed statutory for teachers to be prioritized and be the last to get their slip, and also the date modified for notification. We can do that at the state level.
Madam Chair, Senator Reinbold, that's possible, but, you know, again, it's all predicated on funding at some point. You know, the teachers have to either start looking for another job, either in state or out of state. Again, it's all predicated on when the funding occurs.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, Mr. Wright, the date you're looking for was May 15, pink slips for tenured teachers. And I think you're absolutely right about making sure those teachers have a shot at finding employment somewhere else if we're not going to fund them here. I like the concept. Couple of mechanical questions. So the way this is written, the legislature would need to be done by first week of March, roughly. Am I counting that right? I mean, I know the start date varies, but ballpark?
Senator Reinbold, or excuse me, Madam Chairman, Senator Keel, yes, approximately around that date.
I'm not nearly that good looking.
Madam Chair. No comment, Madam Chair.
Senator Keel.
So thank you. So then I think for municipal school districts, they need to get their budgets to the assembly then by May 1, if I'm remembering the deadline right. So can you just sort of walk me through the thought process of almost roughly 2 months, call it 6, 7, 8 weeks, between the legislature finishing its funding and municipal school districts needing to get their budgets to their borough assembly or municipal assembly?
Madam Chair, Senator Keel, I think I would rather have Dr. Parody kind of walk you through that.
Okay.
But the dates do vary. I mean, if you look at the research, you know, the school districts have to submit a budget to the municipality of Juneau or to the borough of Juneau by April 5th. Anchorage is the first Monday in March. Matsu is the last Tuesday in March. I mean, the dates are all over the place.
Senator Keel?
Thank you. I had forgotten about Anchorage's earlier date. I remember the Juneau one. I have another sort of broad strokes question and a couple of just mechanical ones. But the other broad strokes question would be, would this be more efficient if it were year ahead funding rather than early in the session funding? Would that give school districts and municipalities a greater ability to plan? Is there a reason you'd interested in your thought process behind going for early in the year of rather than pre-funding by a year?
Senator Keel, through the chair, you know, if you look back at the timing of education funding across the legislative, you know, narrative, it's changed, and it really has depended on the priority of that particular legislative session and who's in it. I mean, as you can see, we did forward fund for this year, and we're still having those issues. So I think the forward funding issue is something different. I have supported that in the past. However, even if we did forward fund, if we did it later in the year for the current year and the next year as we did last session, it still doesn't address the problem that districts have when we wait. And the other thing that I might note is that it's not as if the legislature makes a lot of changes to the education funding. We either fully fund it or add funding. And so this certainty, I think, when you balance the what we gain by waiting till the end versus what we would gain by doing it early, I think that the havoc that is experienced in our schools and putting an end to that is much more valuable than any last-minute negotiations that might take place that really, in the end, we don't end up changing the education funding that much. And again, I wanted to mention that this resolution does not affect the level of funding. It simply says that it will be done within a certain time period in the session.
Well, while she's on that topic, if I might make a comment, one of my concerns is we have many things that are very important to fund at the state level, education definitely being up there at the top, but along with other things like public safety. We've spent a lot of time in this committee looking at how to reduce our crime problem in this state and making sure that the officers, the prosecutors, the courts have the tools they need. And funding for that is crucial, just like it is for education. So the concept of forward funding, if it were done in the if it were in the Constitution to foreign fund, so it wouldn't be entrenching a future legislature, I could support that because it would be part of the whole process where there'd be a transition year. But it'd be part of the whole process to make sure we have what we need for public safety, we have what we need to maintain the roads. And it would eliminate the problem as well, because the schools would know a year ahead of time what the funding would be. The trick would be that transition where you'd have to in 1 year fund 2 years. But that to me is, I believe I could support it then, because it would be taking all the different obligations of the state into account at the same time. My concern is if we are just ahead of time doing a separate appropriation bill on education, that before we've vetted everything else, we may realize, and we are experiencing a time of limited revenues, that we might have done things a little bit differently if it were done altogether. So that's my concern. I do think a year ahead, if it's in the Constitution, and so the whole broad picture could be considered at the same time, would be another way to handle it. Is that something that you could support? I'm not sure if I'm communicating very well, but
Madam Chair, I understand where you're going with your line of thinking, and I have in the past supported forward funding. This specific resolution deals with early funding. In regards to your concern about the state has a lot of very important responsibilities, I would not be adverse to having the entire budget passed in the first 45 days of session, having a discussion about doing a biannual budget where we do the budget 1 year and then we do the next session we spend on legislation. I think that there are a lot of different ways to approach this issue. However, I did want to point out that our police officers and troopers are not pink slipped. And I think that one of the things that the committee would have to will be looking at is, based on the testimony that you'll hear, the what we gain by waiting is damaging and devastating to our state. And as we look as a legislature to how to improve results for our schools, certainly we all know that a qualified, dedicated, prepared teacher in front of the students is one of the main indicators of success for our students. And what we are essentially doing is we are taking 1,000 of those professionals and we are essentially requiring that they be let go. And as a parent and also a product of the Anchorage School District, and I also want to mention I've taught in 3 school districts within the state, and I have family members who are in classrooms also, so wanted to mention that to the committee. But my, you know, I share Vice Chair Reinbold's frustration with the pink slips, and I too have introduced legislation in the past that, you know, did not pass. But I think when we look at the situation we have in our state with education and we try to address improved results, I think it would behoove us to look at this timing of the budget, because that alone is creating tremendous issues for our districts. You will probably hear that many districts have 3 budgets that they prepare. They prepare one, you know, for full funding, one for extra, and one for reduced. They essentially are writing budgets in the dark. And there's a lot of dissatisfaction amongst teachers because they are let go. My sister-in-law was let go, and she's a first-year teacher in a rural community. And she asked me, am I let go because I wasn't a good teacher? And I said, no, Greta, you were let go because that's what happens in Alaska. And I'm not comfortable with that anymore. And you know, and I think that it's something that we should consider. And as Tom had mentioned earlier, you know, we first looked at a statute. To me, that would be preferable because it is a higher bar to pass a constitutional amendment. And any discussion that comes on the heels of this in terms of, well, do we want to do the whole budget in that period of time, work on the interim, on our budgets, and be ready to go. The interesting thing about education funding is that we really don't do very many things differently. We either fully fund the BSA or add to it. So we put these districts on this interminable hold, and then after you can't keep a teacher, they go find a job elsewhere. So now the pool of teachers that you're looking to hire is a different pool. And so, you know, this is something that I think that is a serious problem. And it is a constitutional amendment, and I you know, that's not lost on me how significant a hurdle that is. But I also feel like when you look at adverse childhood experiences and the turmoil that is created in lives of kids when adults come in and out of their lives, is it worth it? And that's the question that's posed by this resolution and the question that you have to ask as a committee.
Okay, I kind of interrupted Senator Keel's chance for a follow-up, so I want to give that back to him. Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate it. And obviously, with the questions about year-ahead funding, you're not hearing objection to the notion of stabilizing our school funding and making it predictable. Questions about how it can work best. I did have a sort of a mechanical question about the language in the proposed amendment and how you see it interacting with the confinement clause. I guess would this early education funding bill be confined just to education funding? Could it be the supplemental and education? Could it have other appropriations in it? And I guess I'll ask you the flip side of the same question at the same time, let you respond in whatever order you want. Could the legislature provide a baseline amount early and an additional amount late? Or would this bill have to have all the education funding?
Senator Keel, through the chair, to answer your question about would it expand to other issues, I would say no. The question as to whether or not you could do base funding early and then perhaps add later, I would say yes, but that might be something that perhaps Ledge Legal could respond to.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I also want to get on the record that Senator Schauer and Senator Michicki joined us a while ago, and I apologize for not noting that earlier. Senator Michicki?
Yeah, thank you. Senator Costello, just wondering on the mechanics as well. So this requires transmitting to the governor by day 45. However, did you think about other mechanics for passage of the bill? I just think about the current state that we're in right now. I could see parts of that bill being redlined and then going through perhaps a veto override process or something else occurring that could stretch it out as long as the 90 days, really, if we didn't have other levers in that bill. Is that something you considered?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, this wouldn't change the powers of the governor to veto, nor would it change the ability for the legislature to do a veto override. So those questions remain to be seen. I mean, we would probably be dealing with that, but it would, at least in my mind, we would be starting the discussion and we would be putting some finality to it earlier in the session.
Are there other questions of the sponsor? Senator Schauer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just trying to think my way through this one, Senator Costello, with the other things we're proposing too, because part of our problem with this is our wild spending swings as we go up and down. That's part of what's put us here. Spend money in one year, not the next year, then we got to contract, and now we're trying to, you know, save to the last second, and then we don't pay for the teachers, and, you know, it's like held hostage. I'm wondering, in aggregate, as I'm looking at this, as kind of a suite of bills that have come out, a lot of constitutional changes this year, that if they may not all pass, but if, for example, like the Senate Joint Resolution 6, which is the constitutional spending limit, if changes to the permanent fund structure were changed so that those were more in stone as well, I wonder if some of those key things were enacted, would that provide the stability we need where perhaps we didn't have to do, and I'm not saying not to do this, but maybe we wouldn't need that if those other things were structurally in place. I'm trying to think of the broader picture here as we look at why are we where we are with issues like this, that you're having to come forward to a bill to prevent us from pink slipping teachers and throwing our system out of balance. There's deeper structural things, I think, that are at play that are causing this. It's almost a reaction that you're trying to do to fix something that we're at the end of that whip. So have you in your discussions, and maybe even looking at it this year, talked about what might happen, say, for example, if SJR 6 was to pass, a constitutional spending limit that would prevent us from these wild swings? Maybe we wouldn't have to have this bill or this resolution, for example. Has that been any part of the office's thought process or discussion even later based on what's happening now?
Senator Schauer, through the chair. So I'm familiar with the POMV legislation that we passed to do a structured draw, and I've sat through the Senate Finance Committee meetings on the split and the certainty and basically making sure that our savings grow and that we don't spend more than we earn, and I'm in support of those efforts to spend less than we earn so that we grow our permanent fund. This is a timing issue, and so I do not believe that that line of approach would actually address this issue, because this is solely a timing issue, and what makes it different is that it has fiscal impact, the timing itself, whereas in all these other areas there really is not the fiscal ramifications of having to let employees go because of the timing of the passage of the bill.
Follow up, Senator Schauer.
Well, I was trying to think about aligning it. Yes, Madam Chair, perhaps, but it's more I'm thinking on the fly, and I'm trying to think of questions as I go, because this, we haven't had the chance to have this discussion, maybe sit and talk through it, and I can see why I was going to say if you went to 90 days to try to line everything up, as the people have asked us to be out in 90 versus the 120 with the Constitution, which we fail to do pretty much regularly, if you could line them all up, but then you would have your timing issue you're concerned on, and I'm sure you've discussed that and thought about it. So I'll have to put more thought into it.
Well,
try to think of ways where it might.
Yeah, well, here's one out of the box, a good way that legislature could convene in November. Mm-hmm. And meet, take a Christmas break, come back, and pass the entire budget.
Madam Chair, I was going to say, is like, was that World War I home by Christmas? That was the
same. and I do appreciate the sponsors, your mention of perhaps going to a biennial budget process, or so that things could be worked on ahead of time. There could be the Finance Committee could maybe meet before arriving in Juneau. One of the challenges I could see with that would be after an election year, that wouldn't work. That in-between year, that would work. Before I let you go, unless somebody else has others, I want to find, if you could find out how other states have avoided, or are they having the same problem, if they come up with solutions, because we understand there are no other state constitutions that do this. And then if you could think about the possibility of instead of the early date, instead put into the Constitution the forward funding, so it could be part of the whole state budget process. So for instance, if it were in place this year, we'd be thinking about FY20 funding for transportation and public safety and all the responsibilities of the state, but for education we would actually be thinking about FY21 if that were in the Constitution. And like I said before, it'd be that transition years. Is that something that you would support as an alternative to this? Because as I said, I am concerned about teasing this out when we don't have the full picture of our other obligations. So I would just like to know if you would entertain that as a change.
Madam Chair, I did want to add that in my view, the questions about the budget don't change from day 45 to 90 or 120. So this essentially is just moving it up so that it's earlier. And as far as being open to changing, my belief is that once I've introduced legislation, it becomes it's owned by the process and the whole body. So it's really up to the will of the committee, and I'd be more than happy to talk to you about any other ideas that you have related to how this can possibly work.
Mr. Wright, did you have something on that?
Well, Madam Chair, I was thinking about the biennial budget a little bit, but you know, even if we did a biennial budget, we're still going to have a year where that is going to be there's going to be that uncertainty about funding. You know, the first of the 2 years, every, you know, during that 2 year cycle. So even if we went to a biennial budget, you'd still have that uncertainty during that first year.
Right. I mean, my proposal wasn't to go to biennial. It was just simply to put in the Constitution that you'd always, every year, you'd always be 1 year working ahead in the entire budget process, the education funding 1 year ahead.
And, Madam Chair, I understand that. Okay. But, you know, there was a little bit of discussion about the biennial budget, and I just wanted to make that point.
Okay. Senator Michicki, did you have something? Sometimes when he does the head tip, it's ready for a question. I thought he was getting ready for that, but no, it wasn't. So everyone is good. What I would like to do is bring the Department of Law up. This is the Judiciary Committee, so we want to have a discussion as far as this being a constitutional amendment. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome, Mr. Milks, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, and if the department could discuss this with us as far as the administration, what you're thinking about this being in the Constitution.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. What I'm prepared today to discuss, I think, what we're asked was simply our perspective of department law about whether or not this is would be appropriate to be in the Constitution. And as the committee knows, since we've had other amendments, proposed amendments considered, the issue on constitutional amendments comes up to whether or not it's appropriate to change the Constitution through amendment form, or the change would be so substantial as to be considered a revision by the Alaska Supreme Court and require a constitutional convention. So we've taken a look at this proposed amendment and think that it would be an appropriate amendment. It's fairly straightforward as the sponsors have described it. It's amending the Article 9, Section 12, the budget provision, to provide for a separate appropriation bill for education, and it further provides for a timeline for the legislature to enact that bill. So, in our view, it does not pose a kind of sweeping change in the constitutional framework that would trigger the change being considered a revision that would need to go to a constitutional convention.
Senator Michicki.
So what if a year of advanced funding, forward funding, was included in this amendment? Would you see it the same way?
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, first I have to say what we've looked at right now is just this proposed amendment. Any other amendment that came about or a change in this amendment, we'd have to look at the specific facts. But this one looks to us like an amendment, because the budget article in the Constitution already requires appropriation bill for general spending, and this says there'll be a second one for the subset of education.
I would request that you consider what the discussion that we did have, if it were to be instead forwarded funding, if there would be any constitutional issues with that, whether that would be considered sweeping and in need of revision, or whether that would be could be done by amendment. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the same request, I don't know if you've thought about it. You heard my question to the sponsor about sort of super confinement. Would the sponsor's understanding of these bills being extra confined under the confinement, more so than the confinement clause, would that have any impact on the analysis, or would it still meet sort of the same, fall the same place under your
Through the chair, Senator Keough, I guess, you know, again, the way we look at this is the amendment as it's drafted right now is just saying there'll be another appropriation bill every year, and that's for education. We think that's an appropriate constitutional amendment, doesn't change the powers of the different branches of government, and then it provides the time frame. So I think I understood that colloquy, but I guess our view is, as we see this amendment right, this proposed amendment right here, it would seem to meet the Best versus Ulmer test as an appropriate amendment. Any changes in it, it all depends on what the words are, so we'd have to look at any changes.
Thank you.
Senator Michicki?
Yeah, I asked that question because of last year's forward funding bill passed the legislature. The Constitution talks about the appropriation power of the legislature and that that cannot be bound for future legislators. However, it doesn't talk about the appropriation power of the governor. It only talks about the legislature. So legislature can change that at will whenever they choose to. Therefore, they are not bound. If you had something like that in the Constitution that talked about that, that's why I'd like for you to evaluate that as well. I think that's an interesting comparison, because then it would be sort of blessing it in the Constitution, which gives an exception to the binding, even if you were binding. That's why I think it could potentially be a problem to put the forward funding in the Constitution. So I'd love if you have some time to evaluate those two items. I think it'd be interesting.
Through the chair, Senator Michicki, sure, and I understand your points here, which would be, I think the sponsors described this amendment as not affecting other constitutional powers. And the way you've described the potential forward funding, you've identified some other issues in the Constitution.
All right, and because you are with the administration, Mr. Milks, do you happen to know whether this is something that the administration supports? Can you speak on that, please?
Through the chair, thank you. No, I cannot speak on that. I was asked just to take a look at the legal issue.
Okay. Are there other questions for Mr. Milks? Seeing none, thank you very much for joining us. I believe Senator Keough had a question that maybe Dr. Parody might be able to answer. You had a technical question that the sponsor thought might be better. Do you remember what it was?
No.
Okay. Then I guess, Dr. Parody, you don't need to come up at this point unless he remembers his question. Or maybe it'll be triggered as we bring up invited testimony. So today with us for, actually, you're first on my list, Dr. Parody, so come on up. Dr. Parody is with the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and she will speak to SJR 9.
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Lisa Skiles Parody. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Council of School Administrators. We represent the Alaska Superintendents Association, the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals, the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals, the school business officials, and all school administrators that are serving our students every day across Alaska. I do want to start by thanking Senator Costello for bringing this bill forward for consideration and for the thoughtful discussion that's happened in the committee so far, and just share with you a little bit about why our organization supports Senate Joint Resolution 9, a resolution that, if approved, would result in timely funding notification for K-12 educators. And I apologize for the repeat for Chairman Hughes, because she serves on Senate Education and gets to hear from me often. But our organization undertakes a several-month process in which our members work together to identify what are the key policy positions that they want to put forth for your consideration in each session. What do they feel like are the most important issues in education that may need to be addressed? And we call those the joint position statements. And each of you have received a copy of these probably several times. But two of our highest joint position statements, is that the state of Alaska provide timely, reliable, and predictable revenue for schools, funding the true cost of education in all districts, and providing full funding for initiatives, laws, and mandates that require additional services. Early notification of funding is crucial to sound financial management, as well as recruitment and retention of quality educators. And the second one that is a priority for our organization is preparing, attracting, and retaining qualified educators. Retaining effective educators and leaders is essential to closing achievement gaps and increasing student performance in all subjects across all grade levels. So I call those two positions out to you because of all the myriad of issues in education, those two rise to the top in terms of our priorities in Alaska. And for many of the reasons that Senator Costello and Mr. Wright outlined for you and that you yourselves had in terms of this discussion, we really, I think, collectively have to be focused on those. We're focused on stability. And right now, we have an education shortage in Alaska, the likes of which we've never seen before in the history of Alaska. The national education shortage is as prevalent. And we had a great, robust discussion in the education committee about, you know, is this happening across the country? And the answer is unequivocally, yes, it is. We are in a national crisis of educator shortage. And we are typically in a worse position than the rest of the country because we rely so heavily on recruiting our educators from the lower 48. And so it makes our issues even more heightened, if you will, because so many of our educators come from the lower 48. We talked for a second about those education shortage numbers, and right now we have a 25% average turnover rate across the state. That number, as Senator, Madam Chairman said, gets worse. If you think about turnover, our numbers are the highest the more remote you get. So it's like concentric circles. In our more urban areas, it's still a serious problem, but by the time you get to our most remote areas, you can be turning over 100% of your staff. And we know that student achievement is tied directly to the stability of a quality teacher in the classroom. The second greatest element is the principal being stable. So you've got two really important pieces in terms of stability around teachers and principals with the 25% average turnover of teachers and a 26% average turnover of principals. I think it really just highlights the need for us to do whatever we can to stabilize the school districts. And I'll just add, even though it's not particularly relevant to this bill, but superintendent turnover in Alaska in the last 4 years is over 70%. So when you think about all of those pieces spinning in a school district, the stability is pretty rocky. And we see this bill particularly as a way to help stabilize schools. And I think fiscal responsibility is something that you require of school districts. You want that accountability. But ICER has really shown that every time we turn over a teacher, it's a $20,000 a teacher cost. Every time you turn over a principal, it's $75,000 hit to a district. So I share those with you because I think that's another whole element of the importance of stabilizing districts, because we want those dollars all to flow to the classrooms. And I know we all share in that. School districts start their recruitment in early spring. We're deep into recruitment right now. And it's because we're struggling to recruit and staff our buildings. And so having the ability to have stable funding that our districts can count on is essential. And so this bill This timely and reliable funding notification would have a substantial positive impact on K-12 school districts across the state by bringing certainty and stability in budget planning. SJR 9 would eliminate the non-productive work of preparing various budget scenarios while education funding is debated, as you each have commented, you know, to the bitter end of the session. And it is an age-old problem, as Senator Schauer said. We've been in this process, and something has to give. You want us to be producing and stable. In order to do that, we have to have stable funding. And this appears to be the best mechanism to do it. So I'll close with just saying that I have some members on the line also who can go deeper about the true impacts to districts when this doesn't happen. They can give you some real examples. I'm happy to answer any questions. I do note that the timing of signing contracts, while required by May 15th for our tenured educators, our tenured teachers, and by the end of the school year for our non-tenured, our statutory, they don't track with the practical nature of needing to staff our classrooms, because when we are trying to do this against the shortage, we need to be able to give assurance to our quality educators that they have a job. Because I'm telling you, if we don't do that, as we have not been able to do that, they leave. They go where they can get a job. And right now, that's almost anywhere, because we're in a shortage that the country has never seen before. And there's a lot of reasons that aren't relevant to this bill about that. But I think what is relevant is that if we can put the stability into our budgets, then they can sign those contracts, and we're going to get away from this constant battle of putting our teachers in a bad place, not knowing if they have a job or not. You know, they have families, they have to make plans, and many of them are choosing right now, as we're here, they're choosing not to stay. And I know there's some folks in the room who will testify to that too. So happy to answer any questions that I can. Thank you so much for your consideration of this bill. We fully support it.
Thank you, Dr. Parody. Do you happen to know, because there is a national shortage of teachers, and legislatures typically meet at about the same time around the country, are other states facing similar problems, and how are they handling it? They haven't amended their constitution so far, so I'm just wondering how they're handling it.
Madam Chairman, thank you for the question. And I work with the Northwest states in a coalition. And interestingly enough, we are working with the Northwest Regional Education Lab, which is a federal laboratory that receives funding to support our region, the Northwest region, which we're a part of. And the area we are focused on is this. How do we, across the Northwest, address the educator shortage that we are all experiencing? So I don't have specifics with regard to how each state is handling it, although if you look at individual examples, say for example Washington, our next door neighbor, so to speak, you know, they've really increased their teacher salaries.
Right. I wasn't asking as far as addressing the whole teacher shortage problem. Okay. I was asking about how are they handling this budget timing and the pink slip problem.
Madam Chairman, I do not have specifics on that, but I can definitely get those for you.
That'd be helpful. Thank you. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, Ms. Parody, before you leave, I would like to actually understand that across the country, if that's an easy, if you have a resource that can produce that information as well as teacher salaries and benefits. And I'm not here to talk about that. I'm just trying to understand as a tool on hiring and retention, how that has worked. I know there's some states that are much higher, there's some states that are lower. I'm just wondering how much of a obstacle that is as well.
Madam Chairman, Senator Machicki will follow up and get that information to you.
If you could get it to me, I'd provide it to the committee too. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. it's kind of a curiosity question. As we've discussed, you know, there's those obligations. We have constitutional, statutory, other. As we go through the list, mm-hmm. This is a no-brainer to me because it's constitutional. We've agreed we're going to pay for education. they can argue about how much and those kinds of things. Timing seems critical too, based on what we've done. So at the top level, so far I support this. I mean, we'll see where it goes. As Senator Costello said, things sometimes change in the process. My question circles back to, as we've had some of the discussions about education funding, the tenure and how they go. And so my question is this, as I'm thinking about the numbers and how they're affected, only because I don't know what they are and I haven't asked, of the teachers that we have in the system from the most senior to the most junior, which ones, because it seems like with that tenure that the ones that would be affected are the youngest ones, and that can be germane because those are the ones, if we find good ones, we want to keep them. We don't want to let them say, oh, back and forth every year and off they go. What is the generic number? Is it the bottom 10% that are covered that really are affected? Is it the bottom 20%? Based on how districts do business, is it something different? I would be curious to know how much this is affecting us as a data point to help with the decision of just what this is driving, if that's available.
Madam Chairman, Senator Showers, my understanding of our tenure versus non-tenured, which is the question I'm hearing, is that our non-tenured teachers are approximately 30% across the state. So they are the teachers that would be given notification the last day, if you will, are the ones who typically are pink slipped, as we've heard here, and that's approximately 30%. And I would add that you're right. You know, sometimes those are fantastic, amazing, just, you know, raring to go teachers out of the box that we really want to retain. And today, you know, they can really go anywhere.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Parody.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Nils Andreessen with the Alaska Municipal League. Nils, if you want to please come forward. And following Nils will be Tom Claymeyer with NEA. Welcome. State your name for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Nils Andreessen, and I'm the executive director of the Alaska Municipal League. And I want to just provide some broad commentary in terms of the value that this bill represents to local government planning as it relates to education funding. The National Conference of State Legislatures, NCSL, notes that states bear the burden of ensuring the statewide education finance system is founded on sound governance principles. According to NCSL, and among other criteria, a sound state school finance system promotes predictability and stability of education revenues and expenditures over time. And to answer an earlier question in terms of how other state legislatures approach this, I'm similarly interested in a quick review on NCSL's website. Legislatures adjourn in April, May, June, and July, and so would seem to similarly struggle with this question, and that's something that we can ask our counterparts in leagues across the nation. Every state constitution contains a clause that requires the state, namely the legislature, to provide a system of free public education, and as you know, this is no different in Alaska. The Alaska Municipal League has been a strong proponent of forward funding and early funding education budgets, and in both 2006 and 2007 voted on resolutions that advocated for stable and predictable funding. In 2012 and in subsequent years, our position statements have reflected that, and the League fully supports early funding of the Education Foundation Program, as well as support for school bond debt reimbursement and construction. We remain committed to giving school districts the lead time they need to recruit and retain qualified and high-performing teachers, even as we oppose reductions in school funding. Sudden alterations in funding and dramatic shifts in funding levels or timing cause havoc as districts try to implement programs. Thus, stability of funding is required for the adequate management of school districts. Additionally, billions of state and local dollars have been expended on educational infrastructure, and sudden reductions in funding inevitably cause the deferral and maintenance of this massive investment. Such deferral of maintenance increases the eventual price tag when minor maintenance issues become critical failures. Something must be done that shifts the state from uncertainty and conflict toward solutions that are predictable and contribute to sustainability. We believe that these solutions cannot come at the cost of student achievement, should be implemented over time, and should correspond to local conditions, planning, and negotiated agreements. At the local level and for school districts especially, this resolution is a critical step toward improving educational attainment in Alaska. For municipalities, this improves their ability to budget accordingly and plan for increases or reductions in local school district funding. Local taxes can shift predictably and according to local needs. This bill will improve the quality of the local contribution by building in this responsiveness. In FY17, local governments contributed $486 million to school districts, or 40% of what the state contributed toward the state's constitutional obligation. Additionally, federal impact aid, a form of local contribution, added millions to the total. Local contributions can be more effective when the state's level of support is predictable and identified early on, and local budgets can accommodate changes more efficiently given enough time to plan and implement. We applaud this effort to improve the timeliness of state decision making as it relates to education in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Andreessen. Appreciate your testimony. And next, Tom Claymire, if you would come forward, please. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. If you'd please state your name for the record and your affiliation, and let us know what you think about SJR 9, please.
Thank you, Chair Hughes and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me to testify today. For the record, my name is Tom Claymire. I'm a high school social studies teacher from Eagle River High School, and I currently have the privilege of serving my fellow teachers in Anchorage School District as the president of the Anchorage Education Association. I'm here today on behalf of the 13,000 members of NEA Alaska. Our president, Tim Parker, couldn't be here today, but he hopes that he'll have the chance to testify at a later time if you have any questions or concerns. First, let me say on behalf of our members that educators working every day on the front lines in Alaska schools, more than just teachers. This, when I say educator, typically, thank you. When I say educator, typically I'm using that term broadly to include administrators, bus drivers, cafeteria workers, and everybody that's included in that community to help nurture our students. Thank you for your work on behalf of our state and our students. We know that you are facing tough decisions and working on real challenges related to the state budget. Thank you to Senator Costello for proposing SJR 9. I know that many of you on this committee have spent time in our schools or have kids in our schools and support the work that we do and are committed to students and student learning. So thank you. As educators, of course, student learning is our top priority. That's what we care about. That's what we're focused on every day as professionals. Having a well-trained, highly qualified teacher in front of them and the network of other educators from teachers' assistants, counselors, school psychologists, nurses, bus drivers, et cetera, is the key to their success. We are here in support of SJR 9 because we think that it creates the additional stability and certainty for our students, educators, and the families who depend on our public schools every day. Unfortunately, the way the system is working now, as has been discussed earlier, there's been almost an annual element of disruption as the budget process works itself out in the capital. The Anchorage School District, like many others, not only has no way to generate its own revenue, but is required to submit its own balanced budget to the municipality by March. Without the security of forward funding, because the state budget is out of sync with the local budget process, they must default to the worst case scenario planning for the following year. Which is, and often, as has been discussed, those teachers after the budget process here in Juneau has taken place, many of them get rehired, those that didn't seek jobs elsewhere. And so those layoffs are 100% unnecessary. This is a preventable problem that can be addressed simply by adjusting the education funding timeline. Last year's work, which was a bipartisan, bicameral effort to forward fund public education, was a big help and a great step in the right direction and did create that additional temporary stability we're now finding. So thank you to all who were part of that effort. It felt like a collective sigh of relief among educators when that forward funding was passed, and we were all grateful across the state. Unfortunately, now it feels like Lucy's pulling the football from Charlie Brown again. That moment of stability where we believed it was going to be there got pulled out again. Educators are scared, frankly. They're worried about their students facing class sizes of over 40. They're worried about their jobs. They're worried about their families. And the threat of pink slips or annual layoff notices looms again. Frankly, I get emails and calls every day asking, what should I do? Where am I at on the list? What's my chances of losing my job? What are my chances of getting it back in the fall? And frankly, don't have those answers, right? Well, what should I do? I'm about to get married. We're looking at a house, and my advice has had to be, don't buy a house right now. Don't buy a car. Don't take a loan. And so we talked about some of the other economic impacts of a recruiting and training, that $20 million figure, but the economic impacts go further than that when people are afraid to invest in their lives to stay in Anchorage. I don't know if you saw the recent op-ed this weekend in the Anchorage Daily News that was written by seven former Alaska Teachers of the Year and two Milken Award winners. One of them, in fact, was from Eagle River High School and happened to be my student teacher, so I'll take a little credit for that. These top-notch educators talked about the very real question of why should I stay in Alaska? It's a sad fact that many of our early career educators are laid off time and again. How can we expect folks to stick around to make their lives here in Alaska? We have the worst retirement system in the country. More and more of our early career educators are tuning into this fact and realizing that making a career here isn't a real option. They have no Social Security benefit and a retirement system that state itself projects will only provide an adequate retirement for 30% of those educators after if they do stay for 30 years. 49 other states offer defined benefit or a hybrid system. Alaska has the singular distinction of being the only state for that offers a retirement for teachers with no Social Security and without a defined contribution system. Thank you, Senator Keel, for your efforts to try to address that issue as well with SB 46. But because of the school calendars, teachers have a limited window to get a job as a teacher. Dr. Parody spoke to that cycle as well. Right now, as we speak, people are considering whether or not they can make the decision to stay in the state of Alaska. School districts aren't able to compete with their budgets and make productive and efficient plans to offer opportunities to grow and help children succeed. Add to that the mix of the national teacher shortage, which has been mentioned, and this has been a competitive market. When I was a department chair, Social Studies Department Chair at Eagle River during the Great Recession, and we were hiring, I had the pleasure of getting to read 75 different resumes for one teaching position. The Anchorage School District started out this year with 80 openings with nobody applying. Many of those openings continue now, and the school year is almost over. The state of Washington has been mentioned already, many of our educators obviously are leaving. The attrition rate, the five-year attrition rate in the Anchorage School District is 50%. Fully half of our teachers are leaving within 5 years. We know that teacher turnover negatively affects student outcomes, and this is a people business. Our educators are students, our families, our communities, and so relationships matter perhaps more than in any other job. When educators can stay and become part of the communities, they can build trust and support better outcomes. Kids need to know their teachers, and this really makes a difference when they get to know them, develop that relationship and that trust, to make those, a lot of academics is risk, right? Intellectual risk, and you can't make that intellectual risk if you don't trust and feel safe in your environment. SJR 9 creates stability and certainty that is part of the solution to reduce teacher turnover, to save money, and improve student outcomes. We support SJR 9, and thank you for hearing the proposal today. We are available for questions and appreciate the opportunity to share a perspective from the educators who are working on the front lines with students. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Claymire. Are there any questions? Senator Michicki?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just if we can request that information from Ms. Parody as well. The statement was made that we are the only state without a defined benefit plan. Like to see some evidence that that is correct. And I understand the Social Security problem, which unfortunately was a decision that was made a very long time ago, but I'd like that information added to our request.
Okay.
So through the chair to Senator Michicki, to clarify, there are states that don't have defined benefit, but we're the only one that link, that have both, the sort of the double whammy of not having defined benefit for teachers and not being eligible for Social Security. But we'll get that for you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Senator Schauer?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. You said it, so you opened up Pandora's box a bit, so I'm going to go there for a minute. Because in the discussion, you went well beyond the timeline of Senate Joint Resolution 9. So I have some thoughts for you. As we go down this path of trying to get stability and other things that we can do, I will tell you, as I've had conversations, I have not seen the kind of willingness to help us achieve the numbers in things like insurance pooling and reducing the number of school districts we have. Looking at buildings and bureaucracy where, for example, Anchorage is growing when their school numbers of kids is flat from the mid-90s. And I bring that up because you're giving us the pitch for all the things you want to see and how great it is and those things that we have problems with. Understand that. But as we have this struggle in the debate of trying to get here to find a solution to help you get the stability, so because we want to be able to do that for teachers, we need to see help from NEA and other groups that are going to tell us, how are you going to help us get there? Because when I try to talk to NEA and I get no answers and no help on those problems, it makes it very hard for me to want to go, well, how am I supposed to keep providing solutions when I can't get answers as well? So you can tell us the things that you think you need and that they're important, but I'm telling you, we need help from you as well and other groups to tell us how we can get to some of these solutions that are going to help us save the money and find the stability to provide the things we need to provide for the teachers and the kids. Yeah, that's a big deal. And I, Madam Chair, I apologize. I didn't mean to go there with this, but like I said, you kind of gave us a pitch well beyond and started talking DB and other things. And I will add DB as part of the conversation. When we're upside down by billions of dollars in PERS and TERS, it's going to be a hard conversation to go with the budget environment. How are we going to get there? And we need to be able to find that money in other avenues that we can find efficiencies and reductions to make sure that we're funding teachers appropriately. And things like this can certainly help. But I guess if we're going to have the conversation and we open that up, it's a broader conversation. It's a big one, and it's complicated. I get that. But I'm asking you right now, and I'm pleading with you, help us find those answers, because I have not gotten that kind of cooperation and feeling of, hey, it's a two-way street right now. It's a one-way street. Provide funding. Get us there. But where's the two-way street coming back that's giving us data that we can find in a cooperative environment to get those answers together as a state? So that was not really a question, Madam Chair, and I apologize, but I just feel compelled to get that out there because this is a big deal and we want to get it right, but doggone it, we need help. So thank you.
Through the chair to Senator Schauer, thank you very much for that invitation, and I can say assuredly that I am willing to sit down and have those conversations, and I'm sure if Mr. Parker were here, he absolutely would be willing to engage in those conversations as well, anything that we think is going to improve student outcomes. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. And that is the last of our invited testimony, but we have people who have called in. I am going to put a time limit. Do I have anyone in the room also, just so I know that that's here to testify? I don't see any. Just a moment, Senator Keel. I'm going to take a comment or question from Senator Keel, but when we go to public testimony, I'm going to ask that you keep it to 2 minutes, please. So if you have more than that prepared, I welcome you and encourage you to submit it in writing to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, I'll take a little less time, and I'll just offer Senator Schauer the help he was looking for with a return to a defined benefit system. We can lower the upfront cost, keep it cost neutral or cheaper in the long term, and provide a more valuable benefit. That's the efficiency available in the system. So the gentleman from Anchorage Education Association was offering him exactly the help he was looking for.
Okay, and let's focus back on the bill. You can have these conversations after the hearing if you'd like. So I'm going to start open public testimony. And if you would please state your name, your affiliation, and then keep your testimony to 2 minutes. We'll start with Sean Arnold out of Valdez. Welcome, Mr. Arnold.
Yeah, hi. I'm Sean Arnold, superintendent of Valdez City Schools and president-elect of the Alaska Superintendents Association. So good afternoon, Chair Hughes and members of the committee, for the opportunity to testify this morning with regards to SJR 9 and the various possibilities under discussion to develop a plan to help make our school districts aware of their firm revenue in a timely manner. Thank you, Majority Leader Senator Costello, for bringing this discussion forward. It is exceedingly important for school districts, K-12, to have timely, reliable, and predictable revenue for schools. In fact, this is our key component in our 2019 joint statement, as Dr. Parody had pointed out earlier. We as a school district simply cannot operate efficiently and effectively when we don't know what our revenue will be. It's now April 10th, and in only 4 short months, our teachers and students will return back for the 2019-2020 school year. As a school superintendent, my wish is simple. I want to be able to provide a globally competitive education that will enable our schools and our students to be successful. And there's only one problem. I don't know what my district's funding is, maybe until this summer. I'm required to turn in a balanced budget by May 1st to my local municipality here in Valdez this year. We prepared 4 budgets, everything from status quo of flat funding to a B, C, and D plan of a 5% cuts and 10% cuts and 25% cuts. Just whatever that to be prepared, and we'll adopt that later this month. The question, of course, that comes from my local school board is, what if we do have 25% cuts? We still already hired our teachers back for next year. We would have to kind of spend down and probably all of our reserve funding and our revenues that are in our reserve accounts to make up that difference, and then kind of plan the following year's budget there based on the previous year's reductions. So predictable funding is really required to run our schools, run our district, you know, and this is outside of the discussion there of how much we're receiving. I ask you to please consider to this this issue on the timely, reliable, and predictable funding for K-12 districts. Early notification of funding is crucial to sound financial management as well as recruitment and retention of quality educators. When we can stabilize districts budgetarily, it will improve student achievement. It is, after all, what is best for Alaska's students. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Superintendent Arnold. The CFO of the Anchorage School District, Jim Anderson, is online. Mr. Anderson, would you please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony at SJR 9?
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon. My name is Jim Anderson. I'm the Chief Finance Officer for Anchorage School District. First, I'd like to thank the members of this committee for your efforts during this session. I know it's a tough job, and I appreciate how difficult your task must be. And I certainly would like to thank Senator Costello for bringing this action forward. So naturally, I am calling to testify in support of SJR 9 and multiple other efforts to provide timely, reliable, and predictable funding for school districts across the state. So we've had several years of flat and or uncertain funding, and they are taking a toll on the school district's ability to retain talented employees, implement programmatic changes, and focus on our students' needs and outcomes. Quite honestly, it is incredibly difficult to develop a multi-year strategy to improve student outcomes when the administration really doesn't know what level of funding we're going to have as late as 45 days prior to the start of a school year. Implementing curriculum changes, which require professional development and improving pedagogy for the teachers to improve the level of instruction, following through with data to continually assess and improve student outcomes, requires predictable resources for any initiative that's going to last more than just 1 year. Our budget in Anchorage by charter must be submitted to the Assembly by the first Monday in March. This was the first year in the last several years that when we built the budget in January, we felt confident we would not have to issue pink slips in May. In fact, we build our budget in January, brief it to the board in February, they approve it, get it to the Assembly. So in January, every year, we use current law, which this year naturally included HB 287 and forward funding, and we expected that to to hopefully stand, but we had to use current law to build our budget. So we passed the budget. We were able to, for the first time in 3 years, keep the same pupil-to-teacher ratio next year as we had this year, really because of House Bill 287. But now here we are, I certainly don't mean to sound sarcastic, but here we are, 34 days from the date that by statute we must issue pink slips to tenured teachers, and 42 days from the date, again, by statute, that we have to issue pink slips to non-tenured teachers, and we're really not sure what our funding will be. We know that historically, when we issue a large amount of pink slips, and then we try to call back the teachers about 45 days later and ask them to please return to the district, join the fold, about 10% of those teachers, they're no longer available for hire. They've either left the profession or left for a different district somewhere, either in the state or outside. Because we're the largest district and we have economies of scale, we do have the highest amount of money going toward instruction. So for us, about 79.3% of our budget goes towards the instruction functions. So when people talk about, well, cut everything but teachers, because that's discussed in many committees, we can't cut anything but teachers. By far, our largest expense is instruction. We still have to clean schools, maintain them, and other things. So unfortunately, when we have a huge budget uncertainty, we have to pink slip teachers because by statute, when we miss that date, either way, we have to pay them. So I do appreciate the challenge of what you have in front of you, and I hope it comes off as sincere how much I appreciate your efforts. But I do urge you to strongly consider the need for timely, reliable, and predictable funding for districts in the state. Our children are, they always have been, and they always will be, our state's most precious resource. I mean, their future is our future, and when we fail students for 1 year, we have them for 13 years. If we fail them for 2 or 3 years in a row and we can't provide adequate education, we really don't see the outcome of that sometimes for 8 or 9 years. And it's the same thing for when we get these incremental fundings for one spike for 1 year and we implement a program. It takes multiple years to see the impact of a child from kindergarten to when they graduate and see what was the impact of all of those improvements or programmatic changes. So right now we're forced to live in a strategic funding environment of upwards of 3 to 9 months where we're developing strategic programs that really take multiple years to implement in order to get where we really want to be, which is student success and student outcomes that are data driven. So we are willing to be held accountable for student success, but we do need the resources to accomplish this mission. I know you're trying on every side of every aisle in Juneau. I realize how hard people are working this, and I do thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Senator Michicki?
Yeah, Madam Chair, 2 minutes. We're trying to get through everyone, so 2 minutes turning into 5 is not effective, and I know the next one up is a principal from Nikiski who's going to follow your timeline.
Okay, thank you, Senator Michicki. Yes, Dan Karsten, you are up. Please state your name for the record. Proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan Karstens. I'm the president of the Alaska Association of Secondary School Principals and principal down here in Nikiski Middle High School. I'm obviously going to advocate for this. The biggest reason why, as I look at right now, we have I have 5 non-tenured teachers that I have not been able to offer a contract to. And these 5 teachers are my teachers that have really gone above and beyond, this, not just this year, but in previous years as well. And it's very difficult. Some of these guys are selling houses so they can be mobile. And a lot of times when they leave, they end up not coming back. And if we know exactly what situation we're in, then we're going to be able to let them know a lot earlier and encourage them a little bit more and have some accurate information for them in order for them to stay. These are some of our best and brightest, and it is hugely important for us to keep this generation of teacher. Otherwise, we will have a huge gap between some of our teachers that are being prepared to retire and some of our teachers that are just getting into our business of kids. So I would highly encourage you to take this under consideration and pass this so that we can make plans and keep our new teachers, our new to service teachers, and not have them leave for possibly greener pastures elsewhere. So thank you very much for your time, again, please consider this very seriously.
Thank you, Mr. Carstens. And next, we'll go to Stephanie Adler in Anchorage. Stephanie, please state your name and affiliation for the record, please, and proceed with your testimony. Stephanie, is your phone muted? We can't hear you. Stephanie, can you hear me? Apparently she's not available, or there's technical problems or something. And she is actually the last one I have online. Again, I'll check, is anyone in the room wishing to testify? Okay, we'll try Stephanie one more time. Stephanie Adler. All right, Stephanie, if you're able to hear me, we are not able to hear you. I welcome you to submit your testimony in writing to senate.judiciary@akled.gov. And with that, I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any further comments or questions? Senator Michicki?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate Senator Costello bringing this forward. I think it is a primary issue, it's exacerbated these days with challenging revenues and challenging budgets, but our kids are paying the price. And I certainly support this approach. We'll see what happens to the bill as it goes through, but I think it's key. And Mr. Carstens from Nikiski, we've talked about this, and they work so hard to bring good teachers on, and then unfortunately they have moved people up here that they can't hang on to. And when those young teachers have already had a year to prove themselves as being excellent teachers, it makes it even easier for them to move elsewhere and find, unfortunately, often better jobs that are better paying in other locations, and we never get them back. So I think it's important, and I appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing any other comments, so we're going to set this bill aside and bring it back. And if members have amendments, I ask that you get them to my office by 6 p.m. Friday. And being that there's no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect the time is 3:01 p.m.